conference coordinator. At this time, the call is being recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. Could we do a roll call, please, Marika?
Yes, no problem, Alan. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning to everyone. This is the post-expiration domain name recovery working group call of Tuesday, 23rd of March. On the call today, we have Tatiana Kramtsova, Siva Mutusami, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Michaela Nylon, Helen Laverty, Paul Diaz, Michael Connor, James Bedell, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Nathan Cole, Alan Greenberg, Matt Serlin, Ron Wickersham, and for staff, we have Margie Milam and myself, Marika Conan. We have apologies from Ted Suzuki and Barry Cobb. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Marika. First, I'll apologize if I start making wild animal sounds of various sorts. I have a bad cold, and I'll try not to do it right into the speaker, into the microphone. Before we end, I'd like to add an item to the agenda that before we end, we talk about the timing of this call and how often it is in light of the vertical integration PDP that's just started, which I suspect is going to draw heavily on most of the people on this call. So we should try to cover that. The first, is there anything else that needs to be done to the agenda before we start? Hearing nothing. Marika, could you take over and do a review of what we have in the survey results?
Yes, this is Marika. And maybe first to confirm, I sent out earlier today a kind of reorganized version of the survey, which organizes the survey in a way of putting the questions where there seems to be more support for one answer or the other on top, and basically move down the list where there seems to be more different views. So the question is, would the group like to review the survey in that way, or would you prefer just to go through it chronologically, question 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Well, my position, it makes more sense to go through it chronologically, but I think in terms of use of our time, if we can identify things where there's a fair amount of commonality and we can try to understand where the differences are, especially people who answered other and things like that, so we can decide just how large a consensus there is in any given direction, I think that would be more productive use of our time. Michele?
I go for the more productive use of our time route. But the way Marika has reorganized this, it's pretty easy to see where there is agreement and where there is disagreement, or where there is, divergence of opinion.
Yeah.
Agreed. Anything else before we start in that direction? Hearing no dissenting views? Cheryl says yes. Okay, Marika, it's all yours.
Okay, so then start on page one. Basically, I think that those two questions should be reviewed together. The first one asks the question, should there be a right for the REE to recover his or her domain name registration following expiration for a certain amount of time? And here we see an overwhelming support for yes, and I see Paul raising his hand, so I'll let him speak first before going further on this.
Yeah, Marika, simple. Just there is unanimity here. That was just user error on my part. Sorry, it should have been yes.
Paul, you're not going to be the only one admitting to user error in this. I'll preempt my later comment on some of those as well.
There's a later question where about a third of us didn't answer at all. And I'm personally blaming the survey tool, but we'll see.
It's always easy to blame the technology.
While I was doing it, but anyway.
Say that again. Go ahead.
I'm happy to update the survey where people feel that their answers, either due to multitasking or computer errors have not been accurately reflected. So I'll update this one to show that there's 100% support for giving REEs a right to recover the domain names, at least for a certain amount of time. This question is closely linked then to question 5, like how much time should be the minimum time frame during which a domain name can be recovered. And here we see a broader variation. I mean, I did a quick calculation taking the different options, taking out the two extremes. There were two people that said, I think, 90 days, and one even went further, 90 plus 180 plus 90. So I left those out of the equation for now. And and that came down to an average of 26 days. And I guess that's an area where, you know, the group might want to discuss whether, you know, people find that reasonable, too much, too little. But as there's agreement that there should at least be a right for a certain amount of time, I guess the debate around this question would then be, what should that amount of time be?
Okay. And I guess we need to add Paul to that. Interesting, several people didn't answer this question at all, according to the counts. Several people who answered the first one did not answer the second one. Maybe those are the... I can't explain it. Go ahead, Marika.
I think that's maybe why James has raised his hand, because I actually see that I think he didn't provide a response to the actual date.
This is James speaking. I was actually raising my hand to go back to item number three. Should there be a right for the RAE to recover? And I just had a little bit of hesitation around the word right. I know that has some pretty strong legal definitions in certain areas, and I just thought maybe we could look for a synonym that gets our message across but doesn't create problems down the road.
Ability?
Ability is a good word. Yep. Opportunity, ability, chance, mechanism, all those things.
Yeah, I don't think we were trying to imply anything much stronger than a reasonable opportunity.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But check again when we write the report to make sure we catch it.
Oh, I will.
Back to you, Marika.
Alan, it's Paul.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I just wanted to weigh in since I made the mistake on number three, the first one. For this one, Marika, if you want to update, put me down as an other, and I would put down 26 days. 28.
Ooh. Weasel words.
No, 28, because that's a real number.
Okay, I'll make that change. One question I would have on number three, playing there with words, because my interpretation was of calling it a right would be that you would actually change the consensus policy to stating that, you know, every registrar should at least provide whatever we agree upon X number of days, as a given. I don't know if that, you know, people feel that that's implied in also an ability and opportunity, or whether there's well different views as to how that should be enforced or interpreted in the outcomes or recommendations of this group.
Well, I guess my position is that if every registrant has the right to do this, the only way to enforce that is by putting it in the policy. Otherwise, it's left up to the discretion, and some will have the right and some not. Michele?
How do I word this? I mean, the problem I have is I think we shouldn't jump the gun immediately. Let's see where we have areas of strong agreement rather than trying to get too caught up in what ends up in a policy or what doesn't end up in a policy. Personally, I have issues with the word rights, because I think that's far too strong. I think ability, or one of the other synonyms that was suggested, is something that I'd be much happier with. The problem I have with right is not solely a case of putting something concrete in per se. It's also the case that if you give registrants an inalienable right to do something, then they may try to enforce that right even when they've been given all the opportunities, and yet they have not taken up the opportunity. So even if I were to send my registrants registered letters and have members of my staff go to their houses or offices, if they still have this right, it just seems to go too far for me. It's just my own personal
James?
Argument.
Yeah, I just want to add to what Michele was saying, that the problem I have with right is that it doesn't allow any flexibility. So that, for example, if a name were locked due to fraud, or maybe there was some sort of pending legal action against a particular registration, it would be hard it could open the argument of which right is more, which right prevails, the right of the registrant to RAE to recover versus, you know, the proceeding that is currently in action against that name. So I just wanted to stay away from that particular word.
Mikey, you had your hand up and then down again. Well, again, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I just love raising it. I didn't like the word either. I think I wrote it in my comments on the first try when I posted the response. And so I would agree that if we can back off the word and choose another word that gives us a hint as to the degree of enforceability, that'll help. I think right is too strong.
Well, I would assume if this ever gets to the point where it's written in a policy where words have to be enforced, the wording would be closer to the registrant must have the ability to restore the domain name under such and such and such and such conditions. I'm not sure the word right would ever be used in a formal policy if it gets that far. I may be wrong. But in any case, I think everyone, no one seems wedded to that word at this point. Michele?
I mean, that's it, basically, Alan. I mean, the key thing here is, in a policy, you're going to end up with something along, with something which is going to have certain riders with it. So I think if we could just drop the word right and move on to something that we don't have violent disagreement with, then our time would be used more productively.
I think we already did.
Okay, so this is Marika. So I'll change it as well in the question so that the survey as well reflects you know, our discussions today, if everyone agrees. So then moving on, I think, you know, the timing is probably then we have to take it at a later date and then see where people are willing to meet each other. So if then we look at question 33, should WHOIS status messages related to the expiration be clarified, changed to avoid confusion over when a domain name registration expires, has been renewed by the registry? And here you see as well 73% of respondents saying yes, one person saying no, strong view either way, and three people saying no.
I guess as we go through each question, if anyone has any comments on either elaborating their position or trying to clarify what the question means, it would be a good opportunity. James?
Yeah, I don't know how much we want to get into this, but I was hoping to lobby some of my registrar colleagues to come over to the yes column. You know, my thinking here is that in WHOIS, when a name is in the auto-renew grace period, from a registry's perspective, it shows that it is renewed, and from a registry's perspective, that's all they really care about. But it is confusing, I think, for a registrant to receive a renewal notice but then look at the WHOIS and then see that they have an extra year tacked on, and I think that that might be an impediment to getting more traction from the renewal notices. So, you know, I was just trying to think of what are some lightweight ways that we could draw some attention to this difference. And one thought I had was, you know, having some sort of an asterisk or something after the name or after the date in WHOIS that says, you know, this name renewed automatically but is, you know, open to cancellation for the next 45 days or something like that.
It's renewed, but it's not renewed.
It's conditionally renewed or something like that. I think that that grace period is important and it should be visible somehow, but I struggle, you know, admittedly, I struggle with how to make it visible.
Yeah, it's regrettable we use the same words in so many different ways, and in this case, renew. Jeff?
Okay, thanks, and just, I guess, this will bring up to the point that not all the registrars are in alignment or in a block here. So I think that I know the comments aren't in here. My two points were, I don't believe that, you know, a large percentage of the people who are having issues that, you know, or that claim to be having issues are people that look up information in the WHOIS. But that being aside, I think James had thought, and I guess people have thought of this saying, hey, is this a lightweight or an easy way to do this? And I think if you really think about the mechanics, it's almost impossible or very, very difficult to do something like this because, you know, the registry they auto renew it. I understand that, and it's paid for in their mind. So that is the information that's up there. But it would require the registrar collecting the funds and then having to send a command to the registry stating, hey, we've collected the money, it's been paid for, then the registry having to go in and make a change and updating the who is. And I don't know, you know, it's to me that is a lot of work, and it's very complex and just fraught with chances of a disaster, and where people saying, hey, it's said on here this information and it wasn't true, that I don't know if this is what we're looking for, if that's worth the time and the effort, and if that was really the goal of what we're looking at in this working group.
And if I could respond to that real quickly, Alan.
Sure.
Jeff, you know, you've already put more thought into it than I did, to be honest. My thinking was that there would be this asterisk that would appear when a name auto-renewed, and it would just automatically go away once the 45-day ARGP expired. And there was no confirmation or, you know, verification of that or anything like that, just some sort of a mark in the, you know, attached to the expiration date that says, you know, this is conditional. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, dig in here. I'm just trying to think of ways that we can clarify this so that we get more uptake on our renewal notices. That's it.
McKaylee?
Yeah, it's funny that we're actually having this conversation now, because, I mean, earlier today, several of us were on a call with one of the guys from VeriSign who drafted the EPP, the current EPP RFC, Scott Hollenbeck. And, I mean, the thing is this, is that there's two ways that this could be handled. One, and within registries, where it's handled at the registrar level in some way, or the saner and more uniform way would be where it's handled at the registry level. Now, I mean, there's nothing technically to stop the registries from adding in extra text or whatever in the who is output. I mean, it's catered for within the EPP protocol, and you wouldn't need to do anything crazy there. All you would have to do is agree on what was being put out. I think it's something that maybe the registry operators might not like the idea of doing it, but whether they like it or not, it's still within their gift to do so. And I think that it would make life a lot easier for everybody. I mean, Jeff has violent reasons for not liking this, and while I can understand where he's coming from, I think, you know, he's making it sound more complicated than it necessarily has to be. And of course, he's perfectly free to disagree with me on this. But from my perspective, I think, you know, this is something that technically can be done. If it were done, it would remove a huge amount of headaches for all parties involved, right across the board. So I think it's something that should be left very squarely on the table.
I had my own hand up. I guess I'll take a position not dissimilar from McKaylee's in answer to the first question. At this stage, we're trying to get consensus in principle. We're not writing the implementation spec, and there may well be different ways of doing this, and it may be worthwhile doing it in the what Jeff perceives as a more complex way or in some other way. But if it's a target to give the registrant clear information in who is, I think we should leave that target at this point. And ultimately, we will have to look at various implementations and their impact on both registrars and registries and try to find some reasonable course through. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. I just, you know, as I agree, I mean, Michele, you're right. Listen, technically anything is possible. We've put men on the moon, you know, to get status changes in who is not, you know, technically impossible. What I'd like to say is that if we're looking towards what is, you know, maybe I could just say a cost-benefit analysis, or what is going to get us really to help, you know, to sort of wrap this group up and say what are the issues that our people are having with post-expiration? What can we do to solve it? If we need to pick our battles on what we want to try and do, I would push that one off and say I don't think that one is going to be a big change and one that I would pass on. But that's just my opinion.
Anyone else on number 33? McKaylee.
No, I mean, the thing is this. I mean, Jeff, When was the last time you did from a first line technical support dealing with registrants? I mean, the reality is the WHOIS statuses with the dates do cause confusion on a regular basis. Now, I know that the registry operators don't like change except when they feel it's something that should be pushed down towards the registrars. But in this instance, I think it's something that, you know, it's something that should definitely be pushed. I mean, it's a two-way street. I mean, you know, the thing is, ultimately, I know from my own experience of dealing with registrants, because, I mean, we're a much smaller registrar than any of the other registrars on this call. I see the kind of problems that arise on a regular basis with registrants where they are confused by this. And if anything that would get rid of that confusion would make life infinitely easier for everybody involved.
Thank you, Michele. I'll add a personal perspective, just having often been involved in a number of these confusing cases. What very often happens is someone has a domain who knows absolutely nothing, and when there's a problem, they call their knowledgeable friend. Their knowledgeable friend knows enough to do a WHOIS, and then reassures them, no, your domain's been renewed, or something like that. And I've heard that story far more than once. Anyone else on 33? Then, Marika, it's on to you for 7.
So number 7, the question was, should information on where to find the cost for recovery after expiration be clearly defined in the registration agreement? You can actually see that no one said no, and actually those that said other seem to agree that information should be available. They just provided other options as to where that should be available. I think some mentioned that it should be on the website or it should be at the domain name registration page. So, again, there seems to be agreement that that information should be readily available. You know, there probably is some more discussion required as to where that should be done and how that should be implemented.
If I remember correctly, we did a fair amount of discussion on the rewording of this question, and we originally had should it be in the registration agreement, and everyone pretty well agreed that that is not the place for it. But I think at the time we were talking, we envisioned that the registration agreement would say it's on our homepage or it's on such and such or it can be found at. And I don't think we were any more specific than that. Michele?
I think in some respects this actually is a bit moot because ICANN already issued an advisory on this in the last couple of months. Just basically stating that the recovery fees have to be visible on the registrar's site.
Isn't that only the RGP recovery fee?
Yeah, that's correct. That only relates to the RGP, which is currently a provision in as part of the EDDP that basically states that the fee should be posted, and some interpreted that as just saying, yes, a fee is being charged and not actually stating how much it would cost. So that was clarified, but not in relation to costs for recovery after expiration.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry.
Ellen?
Yes, I have a problem with the words clearly defined, because clearly defined varies with a rather lot of different people. What you might think is very clear might be impossible for somebody else. I'd just like to strike the words clearly defined out of the statement.
What would you suggest replacing them with?
Why do they have to be replaced?
Well, the sentence saying...
Should information on where to find the cost to recover after expiration be in the registration agreement?
Well, I think that was in the original question, and people violently disagreed that we don't want to cast in concrete in registration agreements things like prices.
Well,
It says where to find the cost should be clearly defined.
Yeah, should information on where to find the cost be in the registration agreement?
Helen is just suggesting you can take out clearly defined.
Okay.
Exactly.
Sorry,
that's I'm saying.
You're right. We still have find the cost. I have no problem with that. I mean, I guess the only problem with that is later on or somewhere else in this in the survey, there's a question on should registration agreements be clear and understandable, and there certainly was no consensus on that one. So we're moving
fairly. Well, again, that often is a problem, clear and understandable to a lawyer or clear and understandable to the average layman and understandable to my dog.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that does removing the words here give an opportunity to bury? And I just asked the question.
I don't think it does. I think it has to be in there, and I think people should make all attempts to make it possible. I mean, it's circumventing the circumstances. If you don't put it in, or you make it impossible to do it, or you suddenly put it in a bit of obscure linear A or linear B script, I'm sure there'll be objections to that, but I think it's fairly obvious.
I mean,
without getting into the legal ramifications of, it wasn't clear to me, because my dog didn't read it, and my friend from up the road couldn't find it either, but he is literate. But no, just
what do other people feel on this? And in general, we've come to the conclusion that most people don't read the registration agreement, so putting something there is not the clearest way to alert someone to it. How do people feel about it? Mikey?
I think that they're different points. You know, I think what we're all agreeing to here is that the information should be in the registration agreement and not necessarily specifying where else it ought to be.
When you're saying the information, do you mean the information on where to find or the cost?
I'm reading Section 7.
Yeah.
And saying that I agree with Helen that sentence doesn't suffer at all if you take out the words clearly defined, and that's what we were agreeing to, that it should be in there. At least that's what I was agreeing to. And that sentence isn't really saying anything about where else it ought to go. It might be a good idea to put it somewhere else, too, but that at least it ought to be in there.
But when you're saying it, you're talking about the pointer to where to find the data, the actual cost. Are you saying it is the actual cost?
No, information on where to find.
Where to find? Okay.
Just, you know, we're descending into minutia.
Any other comments? The general consensus is to remove clearly defined. Hearing nothing negative and several positives, we will go ahead to Ron. Ron? No?
Oh, sorry. I just was meaning I was meaning to raise the check mark that I agreed with omitting clearly defined and
okay.
Got the cue. Okay, fine.
Okay, Marika, those words get struck stricken.
Okay.
Whatever.
I've noted that. So moving on to question 35. Should additional measures be implemented to indicate that once the domain name registration enters the auto-renew grace period, it has expired? So you receive 60% responding yes, 20% no strong view either way, and they're 20% saying no. Some provided suggestions in the comments on what measures should be taken. And so, again, this is probably a question where we should see if there's agreement in principle on possibly some additional measures. And I guess a later discussion could then look at what kind of measures might be appropriate or agreeable to all.
I have a specific question. Unless I'm mistaken, Ron, you had said that a domain name must go dark and should not under any conditions work, but you said no additional measures are necessary here. And either I'm misremembering or I'm confused.
Yes, sir. Because that's the expected mechanism that is the strongest notification that the domain has indeed expired. If we play around and remove that notification, then other notifications have less meaning. You know, I mean, if everything continues to work.
So this question was taken in the context of assuming that the domain goes dark. Are there additional measures
exactly, yes.
from your point of view? Okay.
Right.
Marika, I don't remember. Was this, where was this question placed in the order? What was the one before it? I have them here somewhere.
This was actually a new section for one of the charter questions, because the one before related to the who is status messages. So this was the first question in the section on whether additional measures need to be implemented to indicate that once the domain name enters the autumn new grace period, it has expired.
Over and above who is, it was the context then.
I don't understand your question.
No, it doesn't matter. Helen?
Yes, I just wanted to get back to the question of the domain going dark. I mean, there are different ways of doing it, and some registries will actually put a domain in suspension the instant it expires. There's often trouble with that. CIRA, for example, the .co organization, will put the domain in suspension midnight Ottawa time, which drives everybody in British Columbia nuts because it's 3 hours before midnight. The way other registrars will handle .com and .net is they'll actually change the DNS on it, but they'll have a nice little link saying, this domain has expired, please click here to renew it, which might be a better option. I don't want to take away all the options or just have the domain go dark or have the registry make it go dark.
I will apologize. I use the term go dark as a shorthand. I believe somewhere else we actually talk about putting up a page saying things.
Yeah, there should be several different possibilities. So I'm happy that you've clarified that. Thank you.
Sorry, I tend to use shorthand, which I understand, but nobody else does. Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. I was one who said no, and my reasoning on that, since the comments aren't there, was that it should be left up to the registrar. And I think the reason why I stated that was I don't think that we have any empirical evidence that says one additional measure works better than another in notifications for renewals. I mean, I know that you're saying to yourself, what does he mean? Of course, if it says this, then that must be the best way, but we don't know that for a fact, and I think there's sometimes the law of unintended consequences where we could put together a measure and we say we think this is best where it's actually doing the opposite. And unless somebody, comes through and says, we've done the analysis and we did a double-blind study and there was a control group and we know that this is the best method, I would hesitate to ask registrars to produce a certain measure or a certain method unless we know it's effective. It could be having the opposite effect.
Is that it? Okay.
Yep, that was it.
Sorry. I guess I'll give an example of what you're saying, but then use that example as a driver for the opposite answer. On what happens to email post-expiration, there are those who say it should be delivered, and those who say it should go dark, it should bounce or whatever, just as a website does. And when you think about a domain name which is only used for email, the email failing is the only indication the registrant will ever get that it happened. And I agree, we don't have double-blind studies, we don't have definitive information, but we do have plenty of examples of situations which don't work very well. And I think ultimately we are going to have to make a recommendation. Whatever that recommendation is will remains to be seen.
I'm not sure we can avoid making the recommendation.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I thought you were done, Alan. Can you repeat the last said?
I was.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I think that I don't mind, going through this, but I think that it's just, as I said, I'm very concerned about the law of unintended consequences and what would happen and if it really helps. And I think that we need to think long and hard about that before we put forward a policy recommendation, until we have some evidence that it would work. And that was it.
Well, the only other comment I have is, Marika, correct me, but if I remember correctly from our survey, every single registrar in this group and the one other ones who answered the top 9 or top 10 registrar questions in fact do within a few days of expiration, do put the domain name in some sort of abeyance, at least for the web, and put up a screen which in most cases has a message on it saying your domain name has expired. Oh. Some don't. But I don't think anyone said we keep the domain name working.
Right.
I don't think we're suggesting anything different here than what most people seem to be doing.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, I'll just say that for us, we do that as well. We change the DNS, and, so the website changes, and you have information on that, that it has expired. And we do that, we're part of that camp that believe that that's the best way. But what I'm saying is I just sort of in that, I don't know if it's like a libertarian sort of mind, but, I think that sort of thing should be left up to the registrars. And until we can see that maybe that registrants were harmed or that they didn't renew their domain because of those additional measures were not enacted, I'm just tough to enforce those additional measures on registrars that don't do it. Maybe there are none that keep the site up. I don't know the answer to that. I know we don't, but I know most. I agree with you. Most don't, but it's just giving me pause. That's my only point.
Noted. Anyone else on this question? Marika, or 11 then.
So question 11, should registrars be required to offer the redemption grace policy for registries that offer it? 60% is saying yes, 7% saying no strong view either way. One other indicating that the question is unclear, so probably didn't have enough information to either answer yes or no, and then 27% saying no.
I guess I'm curious on the people saying no or no strong way, why they think it's reasonable that the domain could be in hold status or whatever the status is the registry has it in at this point, but it's not reclaimable by the original registrant. And I'm not quite sure of what the rationale should be for allowing that, not allowing that for that kind of situation to occur. Paul?
I'm sorry, Alan. We're on number 11, right?
Yep.
Okay, so the question is, should they be required to offer RGP? And the reason I answered no is simply it's a optional service. It provides market differentiation. We may not. It's a choice. I simply voted no because I don't want it to be a requirement. So I'm not sure where you were extrapolating beyond the particular question at hand.
If you go back to the time when the RGP was originally created, there was sort of a presumption in the community that it was going to be made into a consensus policy for registries and registrars, and it never happened. And the question is should it be happening now? This is why the question is there.
Okay,
James? Sorry, Paul, were you not finished?
Only to say that if that's something that would be a consensus policy, and that wasn't one of the focus of this particular working group.
We disagree on that. I think that it is one of the items that is within our scope, but we can discuss that later. James? James?
Yeah, Alan, this is James speaking. Thank you. And probably agreeing with Paul here as well as with Jeff from the previous question is I didn't like the word require. I personally think it's a good idea. Our company does it, but it puts us in the position with the use of the word require, puts us in the position of determining what we feel is best for all registrar business models, and I just wasn't comfortable saying that, yes, this should be required. And to your point about historically that was the original intention of the RGP, I would ask that if it wasn't in there to specifically require that from the original policy, then there may have been a good reason for that. And I don't know the answer to that because I wasn't around at that time. But it's possible to me that someone somewhere along the line also thought that that was an untenable policy recommendation, and that's why it isn't there today, and that's why it's optional. And I think it's a good option. I'm glad that most of the registrars on the call probably offer it, but I recognize that it's probably not appropriate for everyone, for all registrars.
In fact,
I think that there's another part of it, too, is that there is an additional fee and some additional paperwork and effort involved, and that means that there would be an additional burden for registrars to offer it. So if they don't feel that it's of value for their customer base or the market segment that they're targeting, I don't know that required is the right word.
Of course, they can set the fee anywhere they want. Just for the record, there never was a policy. It wasn't made a consensus policy for registries either, although virtually all of them have implemented it. But it never got to the stage of policy. McKaylee.
Yeah, I just want to defect to the... I was a yes. I want to defect to no.
I'm not sure we allow that.
Well, you're going to have to.
Oh, we do, but never.
Sorry.
I mean, I think I'd have to agree with what both Paul and James were saying, so I'd have to change my answer to no. I mean, if it's the required part that I have issue with. Should registrars do something, yes or no, I can answer. Should registrars be required to do something, changes it quite significantly.
Ellen?
Okay, just getting into a little bit of historical data, the whole reason for the redemption grace policy was because in order to recover funds, registrars can delete the domain the instant it gets to expiry. And in some cases, registrants found that they couldn't renew their domain the instant it was deleted, it was gone, and they no longer had it. So they came up with this redemption grace policy. Basically, if registrars agree to give a certain period of time in order to renew the domain, let's say it's 26 days, 20 days, 10 days, whatever, but a certain amount of time to renew the domain after it's expired, the redemption grace policy should not be a requirement. So if we're going to state that, we don't actually need to say they must offer the redemption grace policy. If any registrar that wants to delete the domain the instant it becomes expired, then maybe they should be required to offer the redemption grace policy. But if we are going to state that they should offer a certain period of time, then there's no reason to do both of them. That should be sufficient for registrants to renew it. I mean, the registrants that would like to have free domains for lots of years are probably out of luck.
And so would I for all of mine, but I don't think that's what we're discussing here. I'm sure you would also.
Well, not if I'm the registrar, no. Can't afford it, sorry.
Cheryl.
So yeah, what I'm saying is Statement 11 is probably not even a required thing to say, or at least we should just take out the word requirement if we're going to agree that they do have some kind of renewal period after the domain is expired.
Okay, but you'd put a rider on that if there were no renewal period, and there are registrars that do that, that then they should be required.
Yes.
Well, not really, Alan, because, I mean, if we're putting in a requirement elsewhere that they allow people to renew their domains, then the redemption grace period is moot.
Well, exactly.
I don't think so. We've had the argument that business models of some registrars may say they don't want to advance the money for 45 days and they simply want to delete it. The current policy says the auto renewal is for 45 days unless it's deleted. And registrars still have the ability of deleting it at any time, including immediately, and essentially not paying or getting back that money. So I don't think we can allow that and still claim that you still have to keep the name up for 26 or 45 or whatever it is. I think those two would be at conflict. Cheryl, I think you're next.
Thank you, Alan. I just wanted to make sure that it was on the record at this point in this meeting that what we're doing, going through all of this, is certainly not just ascertaining where we have agreement and divergence of view, but we also have the opportunity to make better formed and more clearly understood and less open to misinterpretation or misreading questions should we wish to take this survey beyond our internal group. So I think it's really important that as we're seeing, where we have words where whole turnarounds can happen on how people will respond, and we've had this happen a couple of times, that we need to be careful to capture that. So should we wish to take any of these questions to any parts of the wider community within ICANN, that we don't have words like required in the questions, so that we get a more reflective of reaction and community feeling back with the questions. That's all.
Let me push you a little on that. I'm not sure what the meaning of this question is if we take the word required out. I mean, right now there's a binary decision: a registrar can offer it or not.
Yes. But what we're hearing is difference. Well, look at Michaeli's change in this question. When it's a requirement, in other words, mandate with no wriggle room, he needs to change his response. I'm just saying that should we make questions to go beyond this group in the future, we need to be very, very careful about when we use limiting or highly instructive words which have legal ramifications.
And what I'm asking is, what word would we use instead and for the question to be meaningful?
We're not rewriting another survey
now. Michaeli?
Alan, the question is perfectly valid if you remove the word required. I mean, if you want, I can give you an entire semantic analysis of the damn question. Remove the word required and it becomes a question, which, as Cheryl said, you're more likely to get a kind of a general feeling from people, whether they're broadly in favor of the concept. You put the word required in there and you're taking it from being something that I personally might like as an idea, but then for a variety of reasons, telling me that I am obliged to do it puts me into a corner. I mean, that's the question without the word required is much more palatable and much easier to answer.
Okay, Jeff?
I'm actually with Alan on this one. I think the word required should stay in there because I understand that, and I think, Michaeli, your reaction is exactly what the reaction to the question is supposed to be. It's supposed to be, yes, it's required, they must have it, or no, it's at their option. I think that's the point of the question, and I agree with Alan, is that it's a binary choice. And if it's not required, then it's saying, then you're just flipping the question around, saying it is now. Should it, you know, it's not required now. Should it be required? I think the required has to be in there, and I agree with Alan on that.
I mean, otherwise, I think it's a customer survey.
Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, you're asking us to give our opinions on a possible change to policy. I mean, the thing is, the policy does not exist in a vacuum. I mean, it's all very well saying that in an ideal world you would like to have X, you'd like to have Y, you'd like to have Z. But once you start mandating something, it's not simply a it's no longer a question of this was a nice idea or not. I mean, this is a mandate, so I'd have to disagree with you.
Okay. I think we need at least some of those. Where are we, Marika?
Next question is 21. Yeah. So question 21 asks, relates to the current provision in the RA only make reference of a second notice, and the question is this provision sufficiently clear? Here, 33% says yes, 60% says no, and then one person says has an other response, which I interpret to mean actually a yes answer. Or it should actually be a no answer because it's not very clear, especially with regard to extenuating circumstances. So it seems that Ron's response should be added to the no category. Ron, if you're on the line, do you agree with that assessment?
Yes, this is Ron, yes.
And any discussion on it? Anyone in the minority view want to explain their position or vice versa? Nope. Okay, we go on to 26.
So 26 asks the questions, are notices post-expiration required? If yes, please specify details. So 57% there says yes, 21% says no, 7% no strong view either way, and other is 14%. Here again, I think Nikita says that, you know, shouldn't be required, but like another concept, I think Ron indicates that it wouldn't be effective due to the delegation, to the deletion of the DNS delegation.
I don't know what that means. Ron, are you here?
This is Ron. If I can clarify, notices, if the domain goes dark, to use your abbreviated terms, then email won't be delivered, so an email notice is meaningless. So
that's assuming the email is going to the domain in question.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Which is not necessarily the case.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oops.
Sorry.
We're having problems.
Yeah.
So in light of that, does that change your question or your answer? Does that
no, I don't see any way for email not to go dark. If email is if as a way to note, it has to go dark in order to notify that the domain has expired. If there's messages that appear to be spam, therefore you didn't renew the domain name, then delivering them after it's expired, looking like spam, doesn't help the registrant, but email stopping is a clear notification while there's still time to do something about it. So my concern is that if it doesn't really break, then the grace period or delays, there's the recovery actions don't get taken in time to be meaningful, and that is a big loss of.
I guess I'm confused because we're talking about notices to the admin contact and technical contact, not necessarily mail to the domain. Now, I realize in some cases people, ill-advised people, do send their domain, you know, set their contacts pointing to the domain. But hopefully that's not a common occurrence. James?
I guess I'm on the common. Sorry.
Okay.
Just to further complicate what Ron was mentioning is that, you know, there's a way to, by just changing the A record and if the DNS is hosted with a registrar, that we can, you know, fail the web service but still allow email to go through. That upsets the balance a little bit of, you know, wanting to deliver those messages but yet also wanting to indicate clearly that something is, that the domain has expired. But my original reason for raising my hand, Alan, was that I think that this question is predicated on some sort of a presumption of the answer to question, the first question. Because if that is question three, should there be, you know, some period to recover domain post-expiry? I mean, if their answer is no, then then the notification seems to be you know, kind of irrelevant.
Moot.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Jeff?
Did you call me, Alan?
Yes, I did. Sorry,
okay,
my voice is failing.
Okay, so first I just want to say I'm going to have to drop off the call after this comment because of the time differences, I guess, for this week. I have to run, but I was one of the people that answered no on this, and since the comments aren't there, I'll just elaborate and say that My reasoning was that the registrant signs up for a specific term and contracts for that term, and during that term, I am more than okay sending them 3 to 4, 5, 6 renewal notices. You know, I'd be happy to send them one every week if it didn't, you know, if it increased the chance of renewals. But I think once that term is over, our contract as a registrar, your contract with that registrant is over, and they're no longer owed a notification. And this is one where, again, I also agree that the word required is the one that tipped me over, saying, do I think it's a good idea? It may be a good idea for people to do that. Should it be required? I don't believe so, because of the contractual term of that 1 year is over, and once that is over, then the registrar does not owe it to them. But I, as a business practice, I may think differently, but as a requirement, I think that it should not be required.
Okay. McKaylee?
Sorry, I had myself on mute. I mean, look, my comment pretty much says it all. I mean, I don't think that they'd be required. No, I don't agree. That I might choose to do it. Yeah, why not? I mean, the other thing is, I'd say, with some of the CCTLDs that we would offer, just for our own sanity, we're able to offer recovery on a lot of those post-expiry without there being too much pain. Whereas with other ones, we wouldn't be. So, you know, depending on what you're doing in terms of TLDs, apart from your standard GTLDs, it may or may not suit you to do it. So making it a requirement, no. If people want to do it, sure, why not?
Sorry, could you clarify? This PDP is only related to GTLDs, though.
Whether the PDP is related to GTLDs or not is irrelevant, because the reality is if in my business I'm dealing with, let's say, for argument's sake, I've got 500,000 names under management, of which 300,000 of them are CCTLDs, and only 200,000 of them are GTLDs, and most of my registrants are buying CCTLDs and GTLDs, it'll cause greater confusion for them. I'm just explaining my logic to you.
Okay.
I mean, I understand that this PDP is about a GTLD. I'm just explaining to you that in some cases it's easier for us to do things because we're doing other things.
No, I understand. I was just asking for a clarification because you seem to be implying that that we were talking about required for other TLDs also.
No. It was more to do with sanity. I mean, that's, you know, it's just it's like with a lot of the things, say, with regards to the WHOIS statuses. It drives me mad, and it drives my staff mad, that, you know, that there are different statuses set depending on the different TLDs. So, for example, with some of them, there's absolutely the domain, once it expires, that's it. Both ourselves and the registrant gets hit with a significantly higher bill, which is very, very frustrating. It also frustrates me, for example, that I can only register COUKs for 2 years. I can't register them for 1 or for 10.
I guess my only comment is I've been deemed to be insane a number of times, but going down the route of trying to get ICANN to have uniformity over GTLDs and CCTLDs is a little bit past even my level. But I understand why we would want to do it.
Well, it's just from our perspective, Alan. I mean, you know, there's certain things that it's just easier for us to explain to be able to say to people, look, you know, this is what happens with domains in general. It's when you have lots and lots of different ones, it becomes really, really complicated. You know, from my perspective, if I can offer people this thing, fine. But I don't think being obliged to would be a bit silly.
I understand completely. Helen?
Yeah, I also have problems with the word required. I think recommended might be a good idea because, as it pointed out, the agreement has expired with the registrar, so it really is a choice of the registrar to do it. As far as the registrant having the lunacy to have the admin contact on the domain, it's actually quite a good idea. Yeah, you can't send out the email notices if their domain is down, but on the other hand, they've probably noticed. And my experience, because we have actually done it both ways, we've tried letting the domain go longer before we bring it down, and we've tried cutting it. Some of the people, when it cuts, respond, initially fairly negative. How dare you? I need the email for my business. I need my website for my business, etc. And we point out we're very glad that you've contacted us because you have obviously missed all your renewal notices and we didn't really want you to lose your domain, which you were in danger of doing so. Once they realize this, they're actually quite happy and like, yeah, I've renewed it. Thank you very much for letting me know. That was stupid of me.
You've just used my argument. That is, would you prefer that it just disappeared completely and not be redeemable, which is the alternative?
I'm sorry, would we prefer it be disappear?
The alternative to not bringing down email or something like that is that when it actually finally goes, it goes and can't be redeemed at all, which doesn't sound preferable to from my point of view.
Well, there is no point sending post-expiration date notices unless the domain is redeemable. Once it's not redeemable, you wouldn't really want to bother doing that.
Yeah, this wasn't in regard to this question, just in the reaction of customers.
Well, the reaction of customers does show that if something changes to the domain, there is more of a response to renewing it if they really do want to renew it. If they haven't responded, they probably don't care anymore. So it's a good idea to have some change happen to the domain if they're not responding to any of their renewal notices. Sending notices post-expiration is, at best, a last-ditch effort because they've probably received a lot of emails and they're ignoring them. So there's probably some reason why they're ignoring them. If it's going to a working email and then still not noticing it because they've got some really incredible spam notices, then it's probably not going to work sending it to them anyway, so having the domain change is good.
Any
so I still think it's a good idea to do it, but it should only be a recommendation at the discretion of the registrar. Yes, I agree with Michaela, you do need consistencies. Registrants do not understand the difference between CCLTs and GCLDs. You make them as consistent as possible, otherwise they get confused.
Here.
Anyone else on this one? Back to you, Marika.
Number one, question 44. Should a transfer of a domain name during the RGP be allowed? And here there's a small majority saying no. There's 21% of people saying no strong view either way, and there's only 21% of people actually saying yes.
Any comments? James?
Yes, borrowing from Jeff's earlier mention of unintended consequences, transfers are fraught with confusion, problems, and security vulnerabilities, and that's the primary reason people lose control of their domain names. Expiration would probably be, I don't know if a close second, but it's probably a number two source of confusion and vulnerabilities to loss of control. Unintentional loss of control, and I just feel that combining them together is like putting the two meanest dogs in a room and closing the door. I just don't know what's going to come out of that, and I'm very uncomfortable saying that we're going to offer this new service when I think that there's a very strong possibility we would be creating a much bigger problem that will need to be solved later as opposed to any inconvenience or harm that's happening now. Again, redeem the name, wait possibly a grace period, and then transfer it. Seems to be a lot less to ask of someone than, find yourself in a UDRP or a lawsuit-type situation. So I just want to put that out there, that I think that the cure is worse than the disease at this point.
I guess that's true unless the registrar you're with isn't offering the RGP and there is no ability to do anything at that point. Remember, we're not talking about the add grace period, the grace period at the end of expiration. We're talking about it when it's already been deleted.
It's still in the RGP. But I guess what I'm saying is, and now you've got me confused, Alan. So what poor chance does a registrant have?
I'm just trying to understand what you're saying, because if it's already been deleted by the registrar, and the registrar doesn't offer the RGP. Then there is no other alternative other than just to go away for the registrant, unless I'm missing something.
I'll have to think about that one. I'm very wary of combining two problematic processes together, and I'll just leave it at that.
I don't disagree with that. I wonder if some registrar on the call can clarify something. My understanding was transferred during the post-expiration prior to deletion was something that ICANN allowed. And I think Michaeli or Jeff earlier in these calls said that ICANN had sent out a clarification on that recently or sometime in the last year. If anyone can clarify, is transfer in fact allowed or not allowed post-expiration, presumably with, you know, adding an extra year, but nevertheless, it would be useful to know. Michaeli, you have your hand up?
Just kind of this thing about the RGP. I mean, I'd agree with James, and also add as well. I mean, it comes back to this entire thing about the email and the domain and everything else. It's technically impossible to transfer a domain name when you can't really reach the admin contact. Mm-hmm. Sure, you could do it using the offline methods and all that, but I sincerely doubt that a registrant who isn't willing to pay the $10 or whatever renewal fee is going to want to pay extra for, you know, doing faxes of IDs and everything else. So I think it, in some respects, I mean, offering transfers when a domain is that far gone, bad idea.
Any other comments? James, you had your hand up, but no.
Yeah, I think Michaeli covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Marika, 28.
28, and just want to make you aware as well of the time. I think you had already two people dropping off the call, so just want to make sure as well that we can get to the issue you added to the agenda on the timing of the call.
Oh, okay.
So question 8, should further details be provided on when, how these notices are sent? If yes, what further details would facilitate transparency and information, while at the same time not restricting registrars from taking additional measures to alert registrants? And here 53% of respondents say yes. 27% says no. 30% no strong view either way. And there's one other response, but actually I think it's Mason who provided it. He didn't actually provide any other comments. But I don't know if you would like to clarify now his views.
Okay, so we have a small majority for and various other answers making up the rest. All right.
Sorry. Question?
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed you, James. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. It says, should further details be provided on these notices? And I'm assuming it's referring to notices that were sent post-expiry.
No, these are the pre. I think this one followed the definition of the two notices before expiration.
Okay.
That's correct.
So we're talking about the nominal two notices.
Okay, thank you.
Just for information among the registrars, is it the norm to send a message just before expiration? Or are the two notices that people tend to send for those who only send two spaced out in the weeks prior to expiration? Mason?
This is Mason speaking. It depends on the registrar. My understanding of registrar practices is it varies, but I think if you were to plot it on, you know, a graph somehow, that you would find it's weighted toward notices prior to expiration, and, you know, maybe within 30 to 60 days of expiration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other registrars on the call may want to pony up with their own experiences, but the registrar that we run, we send, I believe it's a total of 17, and most of them are they're spaced out initially, and then, you know, maybe a couple of months before, where we say, hey, heads up, it's about to expire, and then it increases in frequency as you get closer to expiration, and then there are several after expiration, and then after a certain amount of time, then obviously it stops.
Sure. Okay. Paul?
Yeah, only to echo what Mason said, it'll depend on registrars, but I think you'll find that forward waiting very common because a lot of registrars will recognize that people will have forgotten to update with an accurate credit card. So if they, part of the agreement, say at the beginning, hey, you know, we're going to try and auto-renew maybe 60 days out, 45 days out. When it fails, it gives more opportunity to actually reach the registrant ahead. So I think you'll find that communication does start early.
Yeah, no, no,
as the norm.
Yeah, the question I was asking was just for my own information. If there tends to be a message sent out just prior to, I know the norm is to start earlier.
Yeah. Okay. And for Network Solutions case, to answer your question, yes, we do many messages to include day of expiration.
Yeah. Okay. James?
Yeah, just to quickly answer your question, yes, there are many notifications prior to expiration, just before expiration, just after expiration, and I can speak not only for GoDaddy, but I am also a customer of two other registrars on this call, and they, I can say very confidently that, you know, it goes beyond adequate notice and into the realm of really annoying volume of notices coming from the registrars represented here.
McKaylee?
Just adding one thing. I mean, the other thing is that what we do is if you fail, if there's a problem with your payment method, be that credit card or whatever, our system will also send you a notification saying that, you know, we've tried to bill you for X, but the payment has failed. I mean, ultimately, from my perspective, and I'd say the other registrars are similar, getting money out of client equals good. So if there's an issue with getting the payment, we're going to tell people about it. The most recent problems we've had with registrants has actually been where we have told them we're going to renew the domain, told them how they can stop renewing the domain. They haven't done so. We've renewed the domain and then they're complaining. So, you know, we're having the opposite problem.
Oh, thank you. Helen?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised about this question. Are some people thinking that registrars don't send renewal notices? Because part of the ways that registrars stay alive is to actually get the customers to renew the domain, so they have a vested interest in doing so. Starting to mandate how they do it, while it says while not restricting them, I think anything you say is going to start making restrictions. So it's a very peculiar way. The only reason I can think this question came up would be people that really don't update their email addresses and they're not getting reminders because of their own silliness.
Well,
so I really don't understand why this question is necessary for a registrar that obviously generates revenues from sending renewal notices.
I can speak from personal experience that some registrars and or resellers do not go overboard.
But they at least do a minimal effect, do they not?
In the one I'm talking about, one.
One notice?
One.
That is unusual.
I picked the wrong guy.
Well, I don't see any reason to make this very extensive anyway.
Well, I think the whole purpose of this PDP is not to address the problems of the customers of most of the registrars on this call, but to make sure that everyone avails themselves of similar levels of service. At least that, I believe, was the intent.
But I don't
understand
what further details provided on when these are sent. Is this, who are you providing them to? Is it being provided to ICANN? Is it being provided to the registrants? Or who is being provided these details?
My recollection of the question was, Marika, correct me, but I think it was following the one on the reference to two notices and asking should the policies be specifying that additional notices or additional timing or other notice be sent.
That was indeed the intention. I did see now that this question actually follows the question on the post-expiration notices. But I do recall as well that the intention was like basically saying, like, if people think indeed two notices is sufficient, should there be some kind of guidance as to when those notices are sent so registrants know what to expect or when to expect notices?
But where is this guide or detail provided? In the registrant agreement? Or where do you put it? Or should the registrants be sending receiving regular emails saying, we're going to be sending you a renewal notice at 15 days before expiry and 0 days at expiry, just so you know we're going to be doing this? Where?
I think this question was asking, do we need to provide guidance for registrars over and above what we do now? So I don't think we've gotten to the point of saying where.
Yeah. Also, like the registrar survey actually found that some registrars do provide that kind of detail, for example, in their policies or FAQs, where they outline in great detail, when they actually send notices and post-expiry, but not all do.
So maybe this should be worded as, should there be recommended times for sending expiration notices?
Any other comments on this question? If not, I would suggest we go on in the agenda. We will restart this at some other point. The next item in the agenda is the initial report timeline. And I don't feel comfortable at this point that we know enough that we can really have this discussion. The deadline for an initial report would be June 4th, which is, 2 months out. And I think at this point it's premature to presume that we can predict what's going to happen. In us finalizing anything to that extent, particularly in respect with regard to my next question, and maybe I'll jump ahead of there, we've been trying to hold meetings every week. With regard to the vertical integration PDP, a significant number of people who are involved in this are going to be heavily involved, and we don't quite know when those meetings will be held, and they're likely to be once a week at this point, but there's also discussion of twice a week to handle time zones. So I would suggest that we defer any question on the report until our next meeting at this point to start with. I would further suggest that I think we need to do some discussion on the mailing list over the next week or so in deciding how to go forward at this point. And I would suggest that we have our next meeting in 2 weeks, which will give time for the vertical integration PDP to stabilize a bit. And we continue at this time to and decide whether we're going to try to issue a report for Brussels, and if so, how to structure the work to allow that to happen. Any thoughts?
Fine by me.
Cheryl says fine by you. Nobody else is saying anything negative. I'll take that as positive in that case. Anything else anyone wants to bring up? If not, we'll adjourn to the email list and meet again at this time, or not this time, but a similar time, because I think we're moving back to our previous time in 2 weeks. Ron?
Yes. This summary, or doing it in this summary way, didn't come up until, I didn't expect that because I didn't get a chance to read this summary thing, but one question concerns me, and that was on a very early one, question 5, isn't it? Wait a minute. Yes, question 5. When an average was proposed,
yes,
by throwing out two outliers, and I think that is unfairly weighted. If you were going to throw out two outliers to not make it go drastically in the plus direction, then those should be substituted by a maximum. To throw them out gives more weighting to the person who enters 10 days, OK? Okay. So it doesn't seem like a fair way to average.
Actually, I just know I hadn't actually read the note. Marika, you're saying you were taking out the two extremes, 90 and then the 360. I'm not sure why 90 is the...
Because I think that ARC is currently, you know, the maximum is 45 days. At least, I mean, I was taking it in and not taking into account the RGP time, but just the auto-renew grace period. So I took that one out and looked at the other one.
Right.
But again, I mean, that was just very quickly a calculation, and you know, any other recommendations on how to adjust that more appropriately are more than welcome.
Okay. When I read the words taking out the extremes, I sort of assumed one at either end.
No, it's the two
at
the
two
end.
The long end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which makes Ron's comments very valid.
But it was taken into account that, you know, currently it's 45 days maximum if you don't take into account the RGP. So that's why I took those 2 hours, as not taking that into account.
Okay.
But again, happy to take that note out and, you know, for people to discuss that.
Putting their math 45 days may make sense because they're advocating more, so at least they should wait as if they did. If they had answered 45, they would have counted as 45 in the average, I presume. So because they exceeded the maximum that's countable, I don't think they should be excluded.
That would make some sense, I think.
I agree.
Marika, you had your hand up. Marika, did you have something else to raise, or I think you had your hand up before Ron spoke. Has Marika dropped off the line?
Oh, yeah, it's Margie. She gets dropped off after
An hour and a half, she has to dial back.
Yeah, I know what she wanted to say. She just wanted to let you guys know that she's on holiday for the next call in 2 weeks. So, although I can manage if it's in 2 weeks.
Okay, so she's here next week but gone the week after.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
She deserves a holiday.
Yeah, she definitely does.
I think we all deserve a holiday.
Thanks.
Okay, and if there's
I'm back again.
You're back again. And Margie said what you wanted to try to tell us is you're on holiday in 2 weeks.
Yes. And I'm hoping as well that Margie said that she would cover for me then.
She did say that.
Good.
And we all thought you deserved the holiday, so.
Thank you.
Okay, I thank you all. Let's try to continue this on the list. I think we need to try to map out a way that will get us forward without stalling too far and hopefully end up with something productive. I thank you all for your patience, especially at the end of a long day for some of us.
A long single day? I think you need to be multiplying that.
Yes, but you're an exception, Cheryl.
Oh, come on, Cheryl.
Cheryl started about 8 hours of conference calls at 1 o'clock in the morning, her time at the end of a business day.
No, my first call was at midnight.
Midnight, I'm sorry. And it is now 9 o'clock in the morning, if I calculate properly. Or maybe different.
8 o'clock.
I haven't factored in time zones yet. Or rather, daylight savings. Thank you all.
Right. I have promises from Michaeli of a coffee cup for use under circumstances like this when he orders a new pile.
You're going to get me into trouble, Cheryl.
No, I'm happy to declare in public any such exchange of gift or gratuity.
On the other hand, Cheryl is happy to get anyone.
Government for nothing, mate.
Michaeli, on the other hand, Cheryl's happy to get anyone into trouble, so.
Yeah, so I've noticed.
Hey, I'm predictable.
Thank you all for your patience with my hacking.
Yeah, well, hopefully the doctor will help all of that.
We'll see you in 2 weeks and sooner on email.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye all.
At this time, that concludes today's conference. You may disconnect. Thank you for your attendance.